This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 119 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, our guest is Mermaid Mickey on degradation versus humiliation. Here's your host, Woody and Chrissy.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting next to me is the lovely Chrissy. Hey.
Hey, Woody. How are you?
I'm good.
Yay.
Chrissy, have you played with the search engine on the kinkycast.com site?
I did. I was punching in all kinds of stuff. Polly and different things came up. And
you're typing Chrissy over and no.
Yeah, don't. I did that too.
So anybody looking for shows, subjects, people that have been on the show, just go to the search engine on the kinkycast.com homepage and click the search button and off it goes. Brings up an overlay page and it shows you all the results. You can click on that and it will take you directly to the archive page and it gives you a little write-up of what the show is all about and a picture of the famous KinkyCast logo we call the meatball.
It's a very good tool.
Chrissy, what's on the agenda tonight?
Ooh, tonight we have a friend visiting through the magic of Skype, and she's in Colorado, and her name is Mermaid Mickey. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, Chrissy.
Welcome to the Kinky Cast.
Hi, Woody. Thank you.
I stumbled upon some of Mickey's writings on our wonderful kinky website, FetLife, and really liked what she was writing about. She says that she's new to kink. She jumps right in with both feet. And Mickey, it seems like your big focus right now is orgasm control. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we throw the word fetish around a lot in this lifestyle, but a fetish has a very specific meaning. It's the things you cannot live without sexually. And for me, I really only have two of them. One is objectification, and the other is orgasm control and denial. And it's something, it was actually how I started exploring this world. I didn't go looking for it. It was an idea that was introduced to me, but over the last a little over 2 years, it's become very fundamental to who I am and what I need.
So you've been involved now in kink for, you would say, with both feet for 2 years. And this was floating in your mind for a few years before that?
No, it wasn't. I mean, kink was to a certain degree. I was in a very long, very vanilla marriage. But I had an idea that there were some things I was interested in. And when we got divorced, I ended up on OkCupid of all places. I'd never even heard of FetLife. But OkCupid has Q&As, and I answered some of the Q&As in this way that showed an interest in spanking and bondage and some of those things. And someone contacted me who had been in BDSM for a really long time, and we had this very frank and open conversation from the very, very beginning. And one of the first things we ended up touching on was orgasm control, because I told him, and keep in mind, at this point in time, I knew about S&M. I didn't really know about power exchange. That was a very new concept to me. But I told him that I orgasmed really easily, but that they were never all that great. Like, they weren't bad. There's no such thing as a bad orgasm, really.
I agree with you there.
Mermaid Mickey, can you tell us a little bit about what orgasm control is?
Sure. Orgasm control means that I give up the control of my orgasms, my ability to choose when I have them, to someone else. So, and that was kind of how it started. When I told him that they weren't that great for me, he said, well, I think that with some external control, you could find that they could be explosive. Because I was, and this is the other part of orgasm control, there's what I would call long-term orgasm control, which is what I do, and is, I think, a far less common kink. But where I will go weeks and potentially at some point in time, months or maybe even years without being allowed an orgasm. But then there's also orgasm control within a scene or within an encounter. And that's what's often referred to as edging or tease and denial. And that's what he was talking to me about, that if I were edged, if I had that opportunity to build, that I would have much bigger orgasms. So that's actually how it started. It started as being about giving me better orgasms and less about it being any sort of power exchange thing. But that's what it's become.
I know for me, edging is really hot. And it's a tool that I've used both, as you said, in a power exchange and also just for my own gratification, right? Because it's really fun.
Let's check the glossary. Edging.
Edging means being brought to the edge of orgasm once or repeatedly. But it's getting very, very close. And usually when you're in a power exchange dynamic, as you get close, you start begging to come. And the person who's controlling your orgasm says yes or no. With edging, they will often say no. And sometimes this is where the more you get to know someone, the more you trust someone, the deeper your play gets. Sometimes even when you're begging and say, I don't think I can take it anymore, they'll push you a little bit harder as they know where your edge is. Other times though, when you say, I can't take it anymore, if they've chosen not to let you orgasm, then they'll stop. They'll give you a second to cool off or at least slow down. And then you start the process over again, at least in a long session that's focused on edging.
Have you had a situation where you did burst into orgasm when you shouldn't have?
Not through edging. I did very early in our relationship. I had a couple of times where I orgasmed without permission, sort of by, well, one time was very intentional. I was just mad and I was throwing a temper tantrum. So I orgasmed. Doesn't everyone?
Sure. Why not?
Works for me.
But the other time I had been watching some porn and edging myself, and I had stopped touching myself, but I'm very visually oriented, and I got too close and I just sort of fell over the edge. It just kind of happened. And so I've never since then, in fact, at that point, I swore off porn for a while because I was afraid of failing again. And I saw how strong of a reaction I could have. Since then, though, when I push myself, I always know where to stop. And fortunately, none of my partners has pushed me too far, because there is a point where you can be pushed too far. It differs for everyone, but at some point in time, it's physiological imperative. If someone doesn't stop the stimulation, you're going to orgasm no matter how much you don't want to.
I agree with you there. And I've been in that situation too, where I was fighting to control myself because I was under control. The devil just wouldn't back off. just a little more. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Yep. That though too, is I've gotten into subspace from that, because as I get pushed so hard, at some point in time, there's this point where I fall into this headspace where, and this has only happened a handful of times, and it has to be with really external someone doing it to me, because if I'm doing it to myself, I'll always stop. But where he just kept saying, no, you won't, no, you won't, no, you won't. And I got in this headspace where I was like floating, and suddenly, here's the thing, my whole body relaxed. Cause when you're being edged and you're fighting really hard, you tend to tense. My body like went limp, and that lasted for a little while, but eventually then it all came roaring back and it was 10 times worse.
Let's talk about the cause and effect here a little bit. As the tension grows, in this case, it's truly sexual tension. It's getting stronger. It's getting stronger. You're repressing it. So your sensory system is running at maximum speed, and then all of a sudden it just breaks over and you go into headspace.
Yeah. I mean, that was really, and like I said, I've only had that happen a few times. If it's more edging, that's just sort of casually part of a scene, it doesn't get as intense. But when the point of the scene is edging and you're pushed as far as you can go, yeah, there is that point. And I experienced the same thing in pain play, where I'm also tensing and going, oh God, I don't think I can take one more hit. And then suddenly something happens and you fall over that edge. And I know it's different for everyone else, but for me, I sort of feel a little bit outside myself.
Yes.
I'm kind of floating. And that's why my body can relax, because now it's a little bit divorced from the sensation. It's like there's sort of a cloud between me and the sensation.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that too. I like some pretty heavy pain play at times. And I know exactly that moment you're speaking of. Yeah, it's kind of a floaty feeling. Exactly. You just kind of move away. And for me, I just kind of grin a lot. when I'm not screaming.
Right, exactly. It's floaty, and it's also the point where I start to become a little bit less coherent. I can talk, but I start sounding like I'm drunk. I slur my words.
Mm-hmm.
Because my face muscles have relaxed too. And so it becomes harder to enunciate, you know?
I do. I know exactly what you say. That's great. You've been talking about edging and how much of a kink this is for you. Is this kind of like the orgasm control? It's not the same as orgasm denial.
No. And that is something, actually, orgasm denial in a way is almost my bigger kink, but it falls under the umbrella of orgasm control.
When I think of orgasm denial, what comes to my mind is cuckolding.
Uh-huh.
I think that's one version of it.
Yeah, that's one version of it.
That's a big kink of mine too, in part because, so the way I put it, you know, like I talked about before, watching porn, I'm very visually oriented. To me, and because I'm a woman, I guess they call it cuck queening.
Mm-hmm.
or what I like to actually just call forced voyeurism. I sort of prefer that. But I love, and I've done this a handful of times, being in a scene where I am only allowed to watch. Because what that does for me in terms of orgasm control or orgasm denial is it takes that strongly voyeuristic streak I have and uses it against me. Because I'm watching them come and listening to them come and I can't. And it's very much a masochistic thing. It absolutely is. Because believe me, I want to orgasm. Orgasm control, orgasm denial isn't about not wanting to orgasm. It's about, it actually is very much about how badly I want to and that I don't.
So this isn't porn on electronic media. This is porn live in front of you. Yes. With all the sounds and the feelings and the smells and everything.
Yeah. And I mean, there have been times where I've literally been like, I was laid on my back on a bed. She was on top of me so that we were more or less, or no, I'm sorry. She was on top of me in what would be like a 69 position. He was standing on the edge of the bed fucking her. So I was literally like 3 inches from pounding genitals. And it was intensely hot. It was amazing. It's one of my fetish you don't get to indulge fairly often because I think we all know threesomes take a little more coordination. Oh my God. I love it when I get to do it. It's amazing for me.
Did you stick your tongue out?
Oh, hell yes, I did.
I knew you would.
I like you, Mickey.
Apparently so did they.
Yay. That's a fetish I have, too. And I enjoy cut queen to a degree. I think that it can be pushed too far, and then I think it's damaging. For me, there has to be recognition.
Chrissy, let's define cut queening before you go too far.
A cuck queen is just a woman who's being cuckolded. It's not a man, it's just a woman. You just watch while someone else is engaged in some type of sexual activity and you can't participate. You're not allowed to participate.
In the normal cuckolding environment, it's the male that is watching.
Right.
So cuck queen is the female version of it.
Right, exactly.
So just want to keep everybody straight here, you know?
I actually wrote about this fairly recently. The thing about cuck is cuck very much stems from what is for most people humiliation play, because male cuckoldry, I mean, that was a term that's been used for centuries just to imply a man whose woman sleeps around on him, who's cheating on him. And of course, when you're talking about a different era when gender roles were much stricter and, you know, a man whose woman stepped out on him, that was a direct insult to his manhood. So it was very much a humiliation thing. And that still persists in a lot of what people who are into cuckolding or cuck queening do. That's not what it's about for me, though. And that's part of why I call it forced voyeurism, because it's not humiliating. I don't ever feel humiliated. Humiliation is actually one of my few hard limits. But humiliation isn't any specific act isn't necessarily humiliating. It depends on who the person is and whether or not they find it humiliating. Humiliation is your reaction. I don't find it humiliating watching other people fuck.
I find it powerful. It's a challenge for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the voyeurism in everybody certainly cause an interest.
Because there can be elements of it where, you know, where while they're fucking, they'll be like, you know, you don't deserve to get fucked. You're less than a woman, whatever. And I'm not judging that. That's, you know, again, your kink is not my kink and that's okay. That's not how I practice cuck. And that's part of why I don't refer to it as cuck queening all the time.
You know, it's one thing to have three people in a room, two of them going at it, one observing. But when you add relationships in there, especially if the one observing is in the relationship with the other person, that's when things get really charged with jealousies, envies, all these different things.
And you know what? It can be, but here's the other thing. So I actually have not done a scene like that with my sir, but we talk about it all the time. It is one of my biggest fantasies. And it really isn't about jealousy or humiliation. Again, it's about taking my orgasm denial fetish and kicking it up a notch, watching him fuck someone else and me not be allowed to fuck or come, you know, and letting her come. I can't. And I know that's a hard thing for people to wrap their minds around. It's a hard thing for me to wrap my mind around, to be honest. But I know when I think about it, there's not an ounce of jealousy involved.
I like nothing more to see my girls get it from somebody else. And I would love to be there to watch it because I want to have the joy that they are having and share it. But some people will go the other way on that one.
Oh, absolutely.
Recently, you had a birthday challenge, isn't that right? And you, how many days did you go without orgasm?
I went 41 days in the end. And actually, just recently did another 41 days. So there has been a shift for me recently in that I am now doing more long-term orgasm denial, because my sir and I used to have a dynamic that we had, I don't even want to say negotiated, but he had given me, because I do have permission to play, he had also given me permission and said, you can come when you play with people as long as they give you permission. There's not going to be any free-for-all orgasms for Mickey. So
permission by proxy.
That was our rule for a really long time. But as time had passed and I was craving more and more orgasm control, I started talking to him about the fact that a part of me wanted to segue into only he being allowed to give me permission, even when I play. But I knew that if we did that, I would lose some of my play partners probably, because for a lot of people, making their partner come is part of the experience. It's part of the fulfillment. And I knew if I took that off the table, you know, that I might lose some of them. I turned 40 in January, and I was really excited about it. My 30s kind of sucked. I'm like thrilled to be 40. And part of my birthday gift from him, he wasn't able to come out with me the night of my birthday weekend to our local club. But part of my birthday gift was he told me that when I came home that night, I was to give myself 40 orgasms. And then I had 40 days of denial. And during those 40 days, no one would be allowed to make me come. And when I told people this, they'd all be like, why are you being punished? And I said, no, it's not punishment for me. This is the best gift ever, because I've been wanting this. And so that was how it started. I had that the night of 40 orgasms, I used my Hitachi and
burned it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. And then 40 days without, and all my play partners were more than willing in a short window like that to say, hell yeah, I'll torment you. I play with a lot of sadists.
Yes, you do. Can you tell me, at the end of 40 days, is it like an explosion?
Yes. It ended up going 41 days because sometimes my mouth gets me in trouble. We'll leave it at that. I may or may not have called him a meanie head, and he didn't like that.
You're so bad.
We have since settled on evil genius. It's okay. The reason he didn't like meanie head was because it's too diminutive. But evil genius works. So I went 41 days, but when I was allowed the release, we played, and he told me before we started, he said, you're going to come tonight, but it's going to be from pain. And I was beaten until I orgasmed. I orgasmed from having a mini flogger. It's this thing sold by a local company called Bear Things that they call their pocket sadist. It's like a little tiny flogger without a handle. The tails are maybe 6 inches long, but it's really stiff, stingy leather. And he used that on my clit. So it was explosive, but it was also different than if it had been a more, you know, there are different kinds of orgasms, and a pain-based orgasm is very different from a pleasure-based one.
Okay, let's talk about fulfillment of pain versus pleasure orgasms.
A pleasure orgasm is the most intense, I think, the biggest, because it's the way the body is used to functioning, and it knows what it's doing, and it's like, woohoo, bring it! So a pleasure orgasm can be very, very big. Pain orgasms, and actually for me, there's one other form of orgasm. We have practiced orgasm conditioning, and I can come from command by him. Both pain orgasms and command-based orgasms tend to be smaller, but they're really intense in their own way because the headspace is so intense. The headspace of having someone beat me until I come is very intense, and the headspace of knowing that someone can simply tell me to orgasm and I will is very intense.
I've had someone touch me, say, touch my arm, and I've orgasmed. Or I've been close to someone and just brushed next to them, just brushed, fully clothed, and orgasmed. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about that. And intense and very different. There's, what do they say? Women have, 11 different types of orgasms?
Oh, really? I haven't heard that, but I would absolutely believe it.
I believe Annie Sprinkles. Is the one.
I'd like to see the list. That sounds interesting.
I am curious. And then there's also a difference between a pleasure orgasm that's built and one that has not. Actually, just last night, I had a pretty intense experience. He gave me a task to edge for 2 hours. Now, I won't say that I was on the edge the entire 2 hours, but basically I was supposed to get right on the edge every 15 minutes. And there were times in between when I was also right on the edge. And then at the end, I was allowed to come and I was using my Hitachi. And when my timer went off, when I knew that I had hit the mark, I switched it to high. I orgasmed for a full minute straight. And I was screaming. I actually had a pillow over my face because I live in an apartment.
I heard you and I'm in Nashville.
I was wondering what that was.
That in my life. But that's, and that, you know, goes back to the whole concept of edging, of what happens when you build and you build and you build. And I built for 2 hours. So by the time I was finally given that release, it was, I mean, I've never had an orgasm like that in my life. It was mind blowing.
When you have your orgasm, is it a muscle clenching rolled up in a ball? What's it look like?
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny you should ask because I was that one in particular. Have you guys seen The Princess Bride? Are you familiar with that movie?
Oh, yes, yes.
You know the scene where Wesley's been captured and they've got the pain machine and the prince is really mad at him. So he turns the pain machine all the way up, further than it's ever been pushed up before. And Wesley's body goes tense and it arches and he's screaming. That was me last night.
Yay.
Interesting. I like that.
No, not to 50.
Oh, I stand corrected. Andy Sprinkle said there's 7 types of female orgasm.
Interesting.
Do we get to know what they are?
Well, let's see. She says dreamgasms.
Oh, yes.
And that was sparked by the infamous Kinsey report. Mm-hmm. And let's see, microgasms and mm-hmm. intervaginal orgasms, breath and energy orgasms, clitoral orgasms, combination gasms. And this must be related to the Hitachi, megagasms.
That was you last night.
Yeah.
Definitely me last night.
I thought there were more than that, but I'll do some more research.
Like she mentioned, specifically intravaginal, but not anal. And I can very much come from anal sex.
Me too.
So you just added one to the list.
Exactly.
Years ago, I had a friend in California, and she was hypnotized that when her small finger on her left hand was pinched, just lightly, she would have a full-out orgasm. They did that just before we went off to the club that night. And so she's riding in the back seat of the car. I was driving, and one of the people in the back seat reached over and just tweaked her little finger. And she's going, ah! And I'm going, oh, this is going to be a fun evening. And so that night we had great fun because she orgasmed, I don't know, 100 times that night. Mm-hmm. Well, the next day she was a singer in a female a cappella group. And she got out there, and they had this one number where they snapped their fingers. You can imagine what happened.
Wow.
It was most interesting.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
Something else happened to you recently. Didn't you earn a piece of leather?
I did.
Your sir is a leatherman, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Earning leather is definitely very important for him. And I was going to a local event, Colorado Leather Fest, an annual event here. I had no leather and I consider myself leathered. It's not necessarily about the actual leather. I mean, of course, most of us do really like leather, but it's a mindset. It's an ethos, I guess you might say. In any case, so I've never had leather. In part, I'm a plus size woman. Leather is just expensive. While the leather in some ways isn't important, in other ways, it's really important. And in leather culture, a lot of times, you don't just go out and buy your leather. You earn your leather. It's given to you. And so I messaged him about a week or texted him about a week before the event and said, you know, I'd really, really like to have some leather this time, please, sir. Can I order myself a vest? Is that okay? And he texted me back and said, no. Mm-mm. Leather is earned. That said, I have something for you. And he gave me what ended up being one, it will be two, but there were production issues, let's say, my first cuff. So I now have a leather cuff that I wear almost all the time. I take it off in certain vanilla situations, but it's not, you know, it doesn't lock or anything, so it doesn't look overly kinky. By the same token, it's definitely a departure from my typical, you know, I would wear more gold and silver jewelry. So it doesn't really blend in to how people have perceived me in the past. But yes, I did earn a piece of leather, in part just based on how our relationship has grown, and in part because I had to pass a test, a very small test, but I was not aware it was coming and I passed it.
Those are the most important ones, aren't they?
Exactly.
They sneak up on you.
Right. Yes, but I had to prove to him that I knew something about leather culture because he'd never told me I had to learn about leather culture. Although now we have since then started, he does have me doing some more formal learning about the history of leather. But that day was more just, I want to see that you've learned something on your own. And I had.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's always good to see somebody come along in the leather lifestyle and earn their way, spread the knowledge to other people. We're very into that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I found, like I said, he has recently gave me a task to kind of create an outline of leather history. And it's been fascinating because I knew some of the kind of broad strokes of it, but learning more about where and how the leather culture in the post-World War II era developed and how it's turned into what it is today has been fascinating. But I also am a historian that I have degrees in history. So it's kind of my thing.
You might want to listen to some of the Kinky Cast episodes. We've got Guy Baldwin. We have Master Ron Kay. We have Nancy Ava Miller.
Yes. I listened to, I think it was Hardy Haberman's about a month ago.
Oh, yes. Right. And Hardy was interviewed. There's quite a few notable folks have been interviewed by Kinky Cast, and all of them offered just tremendous amounts of information that was just wonderful to hear it directly from them. You know, you can read anything in a book, but it's nice to hear it directly from them.
Absolutely. I actually, at Colorado Leather Fest last month that I was talking about, we had the great pleasure of having Mama Vi there. She did one of her quote unquote classes was actually just like a sit down chat. And we got to chat about the library. And I mean, it was amazing. Totally. Like you said, reading is great, but being able to hear someone, and even better, being able to talk face to face, is truly amazing.
One of the people I wanted to name in the leather shows that we did was Paula Smith. That was an amazing one because she actually came up in the male leather lifestyle. She was accepted into the gay male leather, and she really broke a lot of ground. Paula Smith, that was episode 60.
Okay, I'll have to look for that one.
Oh, Mickey, how long have you been in the scene?
I met my sir in January of 2014, and it was just between the two of us for the first couple months. And then he actually was the one who said, I want you to go out and play. He's been in the lifestyle for a very long time. And he said, you need to go out and learn more about yourself, what your needs and desires are separate from your submission to me. You need to figure out what the things you want are. So he said, I want you to go out and play. And so I went to one of our local clubs in April. I had joined FET maybe a month before, and I had met a couple of other submissive friends through one of the subs groups. We'd had a lunch, and one of them texted me one day and said, my sir and I are going to the Denver Sanctuary. Do you want to come? And I was scared to death. I was so nervous, but I thought, okay, I could do this. I've got people to go with. So I went, and it was the night before Easter, and she had a little thing that night where she did a kinky Easter egg hunt, and there were Easter eggs hidden all over, and most of them just had little trinkets in them. One of them held what's called a star player membership, which means you get in free for a year, and I found it.
But yay!
Oh, good for you.
And in many ways, I think that was, I mean, oh my God, when they opened it up and it was in there, I swear I could feel daggers being shot at me like, this new bitch better use that.
Have you?
Oh my God, I was there every weekend. I didn't have my kids, pretty much. I was there. It has become a second home to me. I have so many friends there. And in fact, they helped me celebrate my birthday, because part of my birthday also was that I had to find 10 people, was it? Yes, at least 10 people to give me 41 spankings, 40 plus one to go on. In the end, I had 18 rounds. So it was something like 800 spankings that night. And then I had to come home and do my forced orgasms.
Just so much work you have to go through. It's so sad.
I'm really, truly a martyr.
Masochist, maybe?
Mass martyr.
Yeah.
Confuse them sometimes.
I'm looking at some of your writings. You have quite a collection on FetLife. And, well, I've read quite a few myself, and I really like what you have to say. It resonates with me. I think we're a lot alike in many ways. You have a writing that you put up about a month ago, and it's titled, My Ongoing Denial and, quote, not suffering nearly enough, unquote. What is that about?
Yes. So denial, I mean, it truly is an expression of masochism for me. It's an expression of a lot of things. It's an expression of service, of surrender, but it is very much a masochistic thing. Because like I said earlier, it's not that I don't want to orgasm. I want to orgasm really, really, really badly. But that's part of the appeal for me, not only because I am a masochist, but also because to me, suffering is a great form of service, especially because my sir is a sadist. So he enjoys my pain. And so when I'm in pain or when I am suffering, I feel that I'm serving him in a very deep way. So when I am being denied, I want to suffer. That's part of the service that I'm giving to him. I don't want to get into this sort of autopilot mode where I'm just like, meh, orgasms, who needs them? You know, I don't want to be there. I want to be feeling every moment of it. During those first 41 days, I was counting down. You know, I knew it's, I've got 13 days left, whatever. And so it was constantly front of mind and it really made me suffer. Well, then when we switched to this new rule fairly recently, which I didn't really talk about, but basically when my first 41 days ended, I found that I was actually really missing it, really missing it. And it took me, it took me a little while to figure that out. But once I figured it out, that was when we decided to take the next step, where I'm now perpetually orgasm controlled. The only person who's allowed to make me come is him. So now I'm in this sort of nebulous stage of orgasm denial where I don't have a countdown. I don't know when the next time I'll get to orgasm is, which is sort of exciting in a way, but it also, when I'm not thinking about it all the time, I found that I got to this place where I was like, I'd sort of forget about it. I thought, oh, I don't want that. I don't want that. The whole point is to suffer. So I give myself tasks. Like I will edge before bed. He doesn't have to tell me to. I will do it just because I want to increase that suffering. But like I said in the writing too, at this point in time, I've never gone more than 40 days. And right now I feel like when I'm at 20, 30 days, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. This isn't so bad. I might feel really different if I'm at day like 412 and don't know when the next one is coming. But yeah, no, suffering is a big part of orgasm denial for me, which is a big part of service for me. And that's why it's such a big kink for me.
I relate to that too, as a masochist. And it's hard for a lot of people to understand. They don't get that, but I do, and I feel I need a sadist that will compliment me in that regard and is willing to go there too. But also, there's always the danger of going too far. How far is far enough? How far is too far? Have you considered those boundaries?
Yes, and that's the thing. It was just today when I told him the Princess Bride comments about how that scene had, or how it had evoked that scene for me. And so he, with great mock concern, said, "You mean it hurt? Well, if it hurt, you probably shouldn't have them anymore. I mean, I don't know why you would want to orgasm." And he was teasing me. But by the same token, we have talked about it. And there could be a time where I end up in permanent denial. I don't know. I don't really know. And there was a time where I would have recoiled at that. But now there's a part of me that's like, well, maybe. And I've read a handful of other people on FET. Well, I guess only one I can think of who does permanent denial. But what she's found is that by no longer orgasming, actually, she hits this almost transcendental space. She finds other things that create pleasure for her, and she doesn't even want the orgasms anymore. And I don't know. I don't know that I'll ever get there. That is very extreme. And I will say it's the kind of thing that has to be done consensually. He would never have forced that on me. He wouldn't just say, okay, you're done orgasming. I think he makes little jokes like the ones he made today sometimes to feel me out a little bit and to see where I am on this journey. And we may never get there. I don't know that he's ever had anyone in the past who he permanently denied. I'm not sure, but he's seen what a big kink it is for me. And so we're maybe walking further on that path than other people might have. It's definitely a very big kink for him too. I just don't know that he's ever taken it to a level of permanent before.
Yeah, permanent is a big deal.
And that's everything about this. I recognize, like I said, in this lifestyle, I find it funny that orgasm control in some ways is one of the most common kinks there is, and also one of the least common, depending on which end of the spectrum. But almost everyone I know who's in a power exchange relationship has to ask permission to have an orgasm. That's just part of how you know, how they play. But on certain ends of the spectrum, they're still going to get an orgasm every time they play. They just don't know when. And then there are the people who might do it for a little longer, or who might use orgasm control as a punishment. You've been disobedient. You misbehaved. You can't come for a week. There's a very, very small number of us who are like me, who really actually crave it. Who, like I said, when he told me you don't get to come for 40 days, I practically cried and told him it was the best birthday gift I'd ever gotten. I know that the path that I walk with this particular fetish is definitely different than what's right for most people. But again, in the bounds of something that's consensual. And I mean, there's, which is also another sort of side topic, but what's consensual when you're in a 24/7 or a consensual non-consent type relationship. But still, he knows where my limits lie. And if he chooses to push one, he'll have a reason for it. But he also knows the things that I am willing to go farther on. And this is one of them.
It sounds like a good fit.
We're a very good fit.
Can you say a few words about degradation versus humiliation? You kind of hit along those lines, but they're very different.
Yes, absolutely. This is something that I wrote about once too, and it's actually one of my favorite writings. I will see writings on FET fairly frequently about what the difference between degradation and humiliation is, and I'd read them and I'd think, oh, that sort of makes sense, but no, I still don't get it. And then finally, one day it clicked for me. Degradation means to degrade, means basically to treat as less than human or with less than standard human dignity. So that can be putting someone on a leash and treating them, and I don't even necessarily mean puppy play, but putting a human on a leash is treating a human like a dog. It can mean calling names because it is, again, it's removing that basic human dignity. It can be face slapping. That's removing human dignity. It can be spitting, all of those things. That is objectively degrading. Whether or not someone finds those humiliating is totally different. That's about how it makes them feel. Does it make you feel ashamed or embarrassed or bad? Those are humiliation. And it's something that one person finds humiliating, another person might not. I love being spit on. I love being called a whore. They don't make me feel bad. For another person, they make them feel bad, and then it's humiliation. And humiliation can be a kink in and of itself. It's not mine, though. But I very, very much like degradation, which I think walks hand in hand for me a lot with sexual objectification, being treated like a sex object. You know, the you're just a collection of holes for me to fuck, that kind of thing. But I don't find it humiliating. Now, if you were to, you know, there are a lot of people who really get off on being called a piggy or a cow or, you know, you fat cunt, that kind of thing. That would be humiliating for me, because that is something that makes me feel bad, and it's not my kink, so I don't want to do it. But so that's to me what the difference is. Degradation is sort of almost an objective thing. Certain acts are degrading, certain acts aren't degrading. Humiliation is subjective. It's about how the person experiencing something feels.
I agree. We're so much alike. We need to meet for coffee.
Longer we can know each other.
I enjoy degradation and I enjoy objectification. I like that very much sexually, and also even being used as furniture that far. I don't have a problem with it. I find it pretty hot, actually. But like you said, for you and also for me, to be a pig or a cow or those types of things, that doesn't float my boat.
And also being told that, you know, I'm worthless, something like that, that actually is very bothersome to me. It was actually something, this kind of ties back into what we were talking about with cuck. There was someone I played with doing a lot of tease and denial stuff who was long distance. We just played on the phone and online. And because it was long distance, there was an element of fantasy, of verbally setting a scene. And so while he would have me edge myself, he would create these scenes and he would talk about you know, potential cuck scenes. And he would say, you know, like, I'm fucking her because she deserves it. She's a whole woman. You're not. And that got to me within a week. Within a week, I had a breakdown and I went to him and I said, I can't do that anymore. And he was absolutely wonderful about it and very understanding. And we just did never take it in that direction again. But being told that I was worthless.
That crossed a line.
Yeah, it really did. And again, I know for some people, they want that. They crave that. It seems hard for me to understand, but they probably don't understand why I'm cool with not orgasming, you know?
But again, that goes back to communication. You have to talk.
And it's a crossover point where you're getting into your psyche and you're starting to attack what is the foundation of who you are versus the fantasy play.
Definitely. And that's why I know for some people, like I said, I love being called a slut or a whore. In fact, if I'm edging myself, like I'm turned on, but not quite on the edge, I will start an inner monologue where I imagine someone calling me a slut and a dirty blah, 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 and I will be on the edge in a heartbeat. It is a huge, huge turn on for me, but it's not humiliating. There are other people who feel the same way about slut and whore that I feel about fat. Or worthless, you know? So again, that's the thing about humiliation. It's all so subjective. And like you said, that's why communication is so important. You have to know what your partner considers humiliating and whether or not they want to feel humiliated.
That's right. While we've been talking today, I've been on FetLife and I've already loved many of your writings.
My little admirable's going to be lit up when we're done.
Well, I've been stalking you for a long time. You know, we've been talking. I would like to put a link to your FetLife page, and also hopefully you'll be getting some more attention to your writings. I think this is a topic that needs to be talked about more, and you do a very good job of articulating it.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. I have to say, when I saw names like Hardy Haberman and Guy Baldwin, I thought, what in the gut? What am I doing?
You've brought a perspective that we didn't have, and that's what we look for, is we're trying to give everybody's kink a little bit of sunshine so that people can see it.
Exactly. I have talked with this with another friend who's also very into denial, that sometimes there is an element, even within our community, of shaming people who are really into denial. Like, they'll look at you and just go, well, that's fucking weird. And it's like, you know, but you can want to like lick fresh toenail polish off a woman's feet and it's okay, but I want orgasm denial and that's weird. Like, it is often, I think, a very misunderstood and sometimes even judged kink. And that doesn't bother me because I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I know what I need. It makes me happy, but I like being able to be a mouthpiece and try to explain why it makes me happy to make it seem less mystifying to other people.
You hit on a really important thing there, and that's people judging other people's kinks. What's your kink isn't my kink, and that is the way it is. I'm not going to degrade you for what you think. And we have to really set that as a standard across the BDSM world, because everybody's got something different going on.
Oh, the diversity is incredible out there. Every time I go to the club, there's something new.
Right. And as long as it's consensual and the only people being hurt are people who signed up to get hurt. Because there are kinks I don't have, like humiliation. That's one of them. That doesn't mean I judge other people who get off on it, because, again, we all have our own individual kinks. And as long as we're consenting to it, and of course, there's that whole gray area of consensual non-consent. But even then, you have given consent up front.
Right.
But as long as everyone's consenting to it, I say, fucking go do it. Have fun. I think that we would have world peace if people would just quit being worked up about fucking.
Amen.
Yes. Hallelujah on that one.
Right. I'm going to run for president and that's going to be my platform. Everybody fuck.
Well, Mickey, thanks so much for being on the podcast. You presented your story and your kinks very well. And I think that you're going to be finding a lot of folks taking an interest in your writings on FetLife. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm honored.
You have been listening to episode 119 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we bring you Panther Prowls. Whip it good.